I'd never given much thought to how I would die. But dying in the place of someone I love seems like a good way to go. I can't bring myself to regret the decisions that brought me face to face with death. They also brought me to Edward.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Twilight Retrospective Series.
You better hold on tight, Spider Monkey.
Hosted by Jacob.
You've done us a great service, Jacob. Thank you.
Stuart.
He's not as perfect as you think.
And Arnie.
I'm surprised he took a break from Jedi training.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
If we live through this, I'll follow you anywhere, woman.
Now you tell me.
Listener discretion is advised.
The only thing that can hurt me is you.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Come on in, Bella. You won't bite.
Speak for yourself.
Today we're discussing The Twilight Saga, New Moon, starring Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner, Ashley Green, Billy Burke, Peter Facinelli, Nikki Reed, Kellyanne Lutz, Jason Rathbone, Anna Kendrick, Michael Sheen, Dakota Fanning, directed by Chris Weitz. This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing, and as I tell all my dates, I'll make it quick, I promise, you will feel nothing.
And Stuart.
And this is Jacob, the co-host who is the influencer, and you're the influencee.
You know, I had a choice between that line or I'm coming. I don't want you to come.
I did write that one down, too. There's a lot of innuendo in this.
Is that in this movie or in the porn parody?
That's in this movie.
I mean, you were talking about slimy cucumbers last time, Stuart.
Yeah, the romantic salad bar scene. Well, there's none of that this time. Twilight is under new management, and that brings up questions right away. If you make a $200 million hit, how come you don't make the sequel? Why is Catherine Hartwick making that shitty Red Riding Hood movie I talked about?
Yeah, this was something I was interested in. I had the same question, and I get to watch all these extra bonus features, so I was sure I was going to get an answer. Apparently, Catherine Hartwick, she had time conflicts. I don't know why you have time conflicts when you got a very successful franchise going on, like, you don't do Red Riding Hood. You make time for this. But let me read between the lines and let me, like, what I saw during the interviews when they asked, what's it like with Chris Weitz and how is he different? When I watched the extras for Twilight, Catherine Hartwick, she had a lot of energy. I'll be nice. If I was being more cynical, I'd say she had a lot of meth energy. She just seemed like all over the place. She felt like one of those moms that wants to be their daughter's friends and not their mom, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Watch 13, her movie about raising a kid, and you'll understand that.
And I talked about how Edward's manager had to come to set and say, hey, you need to calm down and work with the director. Like, I felt like maybe they didn't want her. And everything when they'd ask about Chris Weitz, what's different about him? Kristen Stewart says, oh, he has a more mature approach. And the actor who plays Dr. Cullen said, what's different was I felt like we had more direction on this film. Who knows what the real story is? Again, I'm reading between the lines here, but it feels like they, you had questions, Stewart. Was that a parody? Was that satire last week? I think they wanted someone who could control everyone. And I felt like in all the interviews, they separated Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart, and they were very well behaved. And Weitz himself, the number one thing he talked about, what was he going to bring to New Moon? His mantra was, I'm going to respect the books and do it just like the books. You guys have nothing to worry about. Whatever you read, I'm just going to put it on the screen.
And you mentioned that Chris Weitz is the director stepping in here. Interesting choice? Unexpected choice? I mean, he has experience with teen movies. But American Pie, this is not.
No, but it was funny. I was looking up, what is his resume? There's American Pie. Okay, that's teens, and there's some romance there about a boy, a romance, and The Golden Compass. And I saw that. I'm like, I know there's big CG wolves here. And he even said, I'd worked on a movie with big CGI creatures, so that was one of the reasons they picked him, because he had done CGI before.
That's interesting, because a lot of times I hear directors talk about going into the CG features being daunted. Like, a lot of the ones who work with Marvel for the first time, and they say they have the experts on set that'll handle all of that, and you don't need to know any of that as long as you know how to direct the film, know how to work with the actors, and take care of the directing duties. They have the experts on set who will rein you in for the CG stuff.
Yeah, and Golden Compass, he screwed the pooch. I'll just go ahead and say that's a really interesting novel, and he did not have command of it. It's unfortunate, because it could have been great, and for lots of reasons, it was not. So I think in some ways, he needed a hit after Golden Compass. He lost a lot of money there. So, okay, he's got some experience with teens, some experience with special effects and fantasy. I will say this, I really did like About a Boy. I thought that was a great movie. And showed that he had some emotional range. He wasn't just frat comedy and fantasy. If this is a series about love triangles, and this will be the one to create it, I can see why you would get him.
So, how did this one do then? New director, new direction?
Oh, huge. It did huge.
Much bigger than last time. It made $300 million in the States. That's $100 more than Twilight did. $400 internationally. Overall, it hauled in $300 million more than Twilight did.
Yeah, it broke records for midnight viewing. Back when preview night was at midnight, it broke records for most in a day, unseating The Dark Knight. It was big.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't spend that much more on it. It's only $10 million more. So, wow, what a return on the investment.
Wolves come cheap, huh? Or I guess having a movie with no vampires in it.
And I'm guessing that $10 million mostly went to the soundtrack. This one is, I gotta say, I was surprised how cool the artists were that got involved. Artists that I would think wouldn't want to be involved. To hear the way people describe Twilight, you would think that this would be Celine Dion and really cheesy torch singers.
Stuart, they got Radiohead to do the end credits of the last film.
All right, admittedly so. And Stephanie Meyer, in dedicating the New Moon novel, she cited all the musical artists. Muse was her major inspiration. They contributed a song here, The Killers, Death Cab for Cutie, Bon Iver, St. Vincent. Yeah, this is a very hip soundtrack for 2009. Not radio successful artists, but really kind of underground alternative cool emo types. And maybe that gave it some cred. It did with me. I'll put it that way. But we can talk about that when we get into the plot. Arnie, tell them what happens in New Moon.
Bella has turned 18, and for her birthday, she wants Edward to turn her into a vampire. She doesn't want to grow old while Edward remains forever 17. Edward refuses, though, as the Cullens believe vampires have no souls. When Bella pushes the issue, Edward dumps her and the Cullens move away from Forks. When they break up, Edward asks Bella not to do anything reckless. So that's exactly what the teenage girl does. She rides motorcycles with rapists, drives dirt bikes without a helmet, cliff dives, and more. Each time she's in mortal peril, Edward appears to her. She becomes addicted to the spectral appearance of her ex. She goes to townie Jacob Black to help her repair some dirt bikes so she can continue her dangerous ways. While repairing the bikes, though, Bella and Jacob start to fall in love. Still, Bella misses Edward so bad that she wakes up in the night in screaming hysterics, so bad that her father Charlie is about to send her back to her mother. Just when Bella thinks she could be happy with Jacob, Jacob dumps her. He stops consorting with her and spends all his time topless in the woods with a group of equally chiseled shirtless dudes. Bella doesn't understand what's going on until she's paid a visit by Laurent, one of the evil vampires from the previous film. Laurent goes to kill Bella as revenge for the death of his compatriot James, but Laurent is stopped by a pack of giant wolves. It turns out Jacob didn't want to dump Bella, but he just discovered he's a werewolf. It's a genetic disorder passed down to some members of his Native American family. But these werewolves don't turn with the moon, they can change at will, and the only thing these werewolves kill are vampires. But it does seem as if the werewolves have anger management issues as well. Jacob's been spending his time running with a pack of other wolves, and they reveal themselves to save Bella and kill Laurent. Things become complicated when Edward's sister Alice comes back to Forks. Alice, who can see the future, saw a vision of Bella jumping off a cliff and drowning. This did happen, but what Alice didn't see was Jacob rescuing Bella and giving the girl CPR. Alice told Edward Bella was dead, so Edward went to Italy, where the Volturi, the vampire rulers, reside. Edward asks them to kill him,
They refuse, so Edward waits until noon where he will expose himself to the humans. Such a betrayal of vampiric law will justify Edward's execution. To stop this, in the nick of time, Alice takes Bella to Italy, from Washington, to Italy, in a hurry.
I mean, they steal a Porsche so they can get there fast.
Yeah, I mean, they're flights. This is the 21st century.
And they get there right at noon. That flight better not have had any delays on the tarmac, as they get there right at noon when Bella can tell Edward she's still alive and stop Edward from breaking the law and being killed. However, the Volturi won't allow Edward and Bella to leave. They demand Bella be turned into a vampire or killed to protect vampiric secrets. Alice says she has a vision that Bella will be turned into a vampire, so the Volturi let them go. The Cullens agree to turn Bella into a vampire, though Edward and a couple other vampires disagree with the choice. Bella wants Edward to turn her, and he says he will if she marries him. Bella gasps in shock and disbelief as credits roll. This is one of those movies, you know how they say what this movie would be if there were cell phones, like Home Alone, if there were cell phones, then Kevin could have texted his mom, hey, you forgot me. And Kevin's mom could have texted back, oh my god, I'm so sorry, stay put, I'll be on the next flight. This whole movie could have been stopped by FaceTime.
I mean, what's crazy is, we saw in the last film, Bella does have a cell phone, and Edward decides to call the landline instead.
But of course, miscommunication is central to Romeo and Juliet, and this movie is going to start with a quote from Shakespeare. Never forget the fact that Juliet took a sleeping potion that Romeo thought was actual poison, killed himself because he thought she was dead. She wakes up and has to kill herself. They're telling you that this could be the fate for Bella and Edward here at the beginning when we had this bizarre dream returning to that meadow where they fell in love in sparkling delight and finding that, yeah, Bella realizes she's got limited time here. I am still young and beautiful, but if you don't bite me soon, I'm going to look like my grandma.
I mean, she's 18. Soon, I guess, in vampire years.
And Bella's turning 18, which is significant because that's 1 year beyond when Edward ever got as a human being. He's forever 17. She's the old lady. She's the cougar with 365 days on him.
In most states, they've suddenly broken a law where them sleeping together would be statutory rape because Edward is below 18.
Edward's 100 years old, though, so he almost committed statutory rape last time.
Yeah, he's the predator. And again, keep in mind, these are virginal characters. Nobody has consummated this relationship. That's, in fact, what I would argue is the excitement, is the erotica of, I want you so bad, but I can't have you. If they ever were to consummate, it wouldn't be any fun anymore. Edward wouldn't be interested if she were actually a vampire. And who knows? Maybe she would not find that life so great either.
But she is more in with the Cullen family than her own. I can see why she'd want to be a vampire. It's her birthday. Her father isn't doing much. He gave her a camera. And meanwhile, the Cullens are throwing her a big party and giving her dress and really making a big deal out of it. They've accepted her mostly into the clan.
Yeah, Rosalie still doesn't like her, but the rest do.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think her dad is just not as rich. If you're immortal, it's easy to amass a fortune. In the book, they even talk about that they were going to buy all these other extravagant things, and she told them no. Because she's always a self-pitying, self-sacrificing character, she's always saying, don't do anything for me. I don't deserve it. She didn't even want this party.
And because she's such a klutz, she gets a paper cut on wrapping paper. Look, I'd probably just buy really cheap wrapping paper. It's super thin. Like, I need a good sturdy paper to give me a paper cut. But she cuts herself to the point of blood dripping out onto the rug.
I don't think it's possible to do on today's wrapping paper because it's all recycled. And I can't even get that stuff to bend without tearing, let alone it cut my skin.
You know the Cullens buy that high-end stuff, though, from, like, papyrus.
Because they are all really old, do you think they unwrap gifts very carefully and peel the tape and then save the paper? And so this is, like, 100-year-old wrapping paper, and that's why it's sharp?
Could be.
It would be yellow, though. I mean, I don't think that paper ages well.
But the sight of this blood makes Jasper lose it. Like, that bloodlust kicks in. He's gotta bite Bella.
You know, when I read this in the book, I thought it was a scary scene. When I watch this, it comes off goofier.
Yeah, I think we kind of talked about that last time, is when we see that super speed at first as they run up that mountain. That's when it kind of lost us. And yeah, you have 10 million more, but you got to spend that on wolves, and these superpower effects are not any better.
I also just, I'm not down with this look, this pasty, we're from the 18th century and putting white pancake makeup on our face and painting our lips and all of this. This just looks wrong. They look like a new wave band, and that feels wrong in 2009.
I go with it because they're vampires. Vampires are just known to be pasty. This is their aesthetic. I'm fine with that. I think Edward's a little bit foolish for, I'm going to save you, Bella, by throwing you into a wall and landing on a table. He was much smarter when he stopped the car than when he's throwing her across the room for her protection.
Yeah, and protecting her is an interesting thing, because Edward, let's just talk about it. He is always saying promises that he doesn't live up to, right? It's always about, I can't be with you, after he tells her he's going to be. And I feel like this is just another example of him not doing a very good job of making her a part of this family.
Yeah, she wants to be a vampire. She's 18 at this point, and he's still denying her. Even after seeing this danger with Jasper, he still won't do it.
An interesting idea put in this movie that I wonder if it was better explored in the book is that Edward believes when you get turned into a vampire, you lose your soul. So vampires are soulless beings. Your soul suffers a death when you turn into one of the undead, and that's why he won't do it. And I just thought that was interesting, but not really explored. It's said out loud, and just like, that's their religion. That's what they believe, and nothing more.
Well, Arnie, you just summed up what we thought about the book. Yeah, there's interesting ideas in there about the soul that ultimately go nowhere, and yeah, it's funny that you found interest in that part of this movie as well, because it's one of the more interesting things, but neither the book or the movie do anything with it.
It should also be pointed out that this is not Edward's scene to explain that. This is the scene where, I actually like this moment. Bella is covered in blood. Suddenly, this family that loves her is going to lose control and tear her to pieces, all of them. And the only one that has really managed to maintain composure in the sight of blood is Carlisle. Think about it. He's a doctor. He sees human blood all the time. He has trained his mind to not desire it.
I thought we were going to find something interesting out about Carlisle, because before this whole bloodletting happens, there's this exposition about the Volturi. There's this painting on the wall, this council of vampires. And Carlisle, it's shown he used to be a member of them. And we're going to find out they're much more sinister. Like, again, interesting things there to explore that they will not.
But we don't know that they won't explore them in later movies. But in this encapsulation, it leaves a lot wanting in terms of backstory. This is really Carlisle's only moment here. And it was the first time I really thought it was remarkable that he had chosen this profession. But because he is a doctor, and he's always going to look 28 years old, and he's been in Forks all this time, they got to skedaddle. He can't go by gray hair dye and pass for 35, 40. They've got to move on to LA or some other town and leave Forks behind.
Is that true? I mean, I know Edward says people are starting to notice we aren't aging, but the timing of it is so convenient. I thought that was Edward spouting bullshit, and he really just wants to leave because Bella won't give up on the whole vampire thing.
Yes, you've now tapped in to the insidiousness of Edward. Is that, yes, while he would have you believe he's leaving her, sparing her the pain of this tortured romance that they have, in truth, it excites him to see her want him so badly.
Yeah, I feel like getting too old to be in the town is an excuse. This is, for whatever reason, because of what happened with Jasper, maybe Edward just does, he has committal issues. He's got to move on.
And yet they seem so comfortable together. You know, when we saw them the whole last movie, it always felt awkward and tentative. And here at the beginning, when they're watching Romeo and Juliet in class and everything, he's putting his arm around her in school, they're hanging out, they're really coming across like a normal high school couple. And so it's really hard for me to reconcile his reticence with what appears to be his commitment.
Well, here's what I would say to that. Last time, I framed it in terms of loss of virginity. And guys usually are all in on let's have sex. But this time it feels more like she's pressuring him to get married. And he's like, but I'm only 17. You know, like that's a more relatable conflict here. I love you a lot, but I don't want this forever. And so, yeah, maybe I'm going to go on to the next town and have another girl fall hopelessly in love with me. I don't like Edward. I'll just go ahead and put it out there. I just find him in both this movie and the last to have really suspicious motives. And I just hate the way that he's always one scene saying, I love you forever, and the next saying, I can't be with you.
Yeah, he's running away, probably will find someone else to hook up with eventually. But when Jacob shows up at school to give Bella a birthday present, he's like, again, super upset, super possessive, does not like Jacob sniffing around. But dude, you're leaving.
Yeah, it is a very strange dichotomy. I noticed it during that Jacob scene too, but he didn't know he was leaving during the birthday scene.
Again, are they really leaving for the reasons they're saying they're leaving? Or is he leaving because every time it starts to get serious, he's flaky, withholding?
Yeah, I think that's the whole thing. It comes out of the blue. If they were really leaving because of the age thing, it wouldn't be like a mallet to the head when he just drops it out of nowhere. But before he leaves, he is going to tell her about this vampire ruler class, which I had no idea that meme was from Twilight.
Michael Sheen! I kept telling you, Michael Sheen is a meme from these movies.
Yeah, Michael Sheen. I did not know that those aristocrats looking down among the people that I see in so many memes is from this early scene when they're talking about vampires. And I was like, oh my God.
Last time I said that this series didn't feel anything like Underworld, I'm changing my vote. This feels very Underworld. And not just because Michael Sheen's in both.
And yet, maybe because this has slightly more money. I don't know. The costumes are better, at least.
And you say Underworld, but this all goes back. This is all aping Anne Rice.
Yeah, the idea of an aristocracy and covens and all of that, certainly. The idea of centuries of behavior. The book, obviously, is going to go a little bit more into this. And I thought some of those ideas were fascinating. Here, you just get the sense that, yeah, somewhere in Italy, there's a bunch of evil vampires, and Edward, his plan was to have them kill him if he wasn't able to save Bella last movie. He claims he can't live without Bella, and so, like Romeo, he would have taken his life if she had died. And we do see here in the flashback that Michael Sheen, Aro is his character's name, they have a method of just, not just breaking your neck, but tearing your head off your body.
This is what I was telling you what happened to James in the last film. It's hard to see because it's so far in the background, but yeah, rip off the limbs, rip off the head, and burn that thing. I don't think they burn this body, though.
Yeah, it's like drawing and quartering plus a head. But because they're vampires, they could just do it with their hands.
Right. Okay, so Act 2, a new moon is a very dark period of the lunar cycle. We are to also see that Bella's life gets very, very dark without Edward. Although she was always a little bit dark, right? Always the original goth. But now she's definitely, you know, Chris White's, he likes to stage mini scenes with the camera spinning around characters. And we have this long montage of her with November passing, December passing, the seasons changing outside the window. And poor Bella is just huddled inside, moping.
Yeah, Jacob's dream catcher is doing nothing. She's like waking up screaming in the middle of the night from nightmares we'll never see. They did have it in one of the deleted scenes. You could see some of the nightmares. I mean, it was just her trying to reconcile if she's going to be a vampire or not. They weren't that scary, but they were kind of moody, like that opening scene where she turns into her grandma.
I'm with the father, though. I mean, I'm not great with over-emotional people. And I'm not great with kids. And so if I had an over-emotional kid, I'd be sending her off to her mother's too.
Yeah, I actually like this dad character. He's the only character that actually feels real. Like, yeah. He's in a different movie than anybody else. But you see his struggle to try and relate to this child that he obviously loves. But again, he kept her room like it was when she was a four-year-old. And he just doesn't know how to deal with teenagers. And yeah, sending her off to mom is something she doesn't want to do anymore. I think she wants to stay in Forks because she believes Edward will come back for her one day. He will regret this decision. And goddamn it, if he doesn't, I'm going to make him. I'm going to start doing things to bait him to come back and rescue me.
Starting with those rapists from the last movie, she's trying to convince her dad, don't send me away. I've got a date with Jessica, the Anna Kendrick character, and we're going to go see a movie, but hey, there's those rapists. I'm going to go on a motorcycle ride with one of them. That's a little much.
And of course, the movie they're seeing is a zombie movie called The Dead Come Back. Everything she's doing, even when it looks like distraction, is pining for Edward.
Yeah, she's got to have those adrenalized horror films to get off to as well. But when I first saw this movie, when I got to this scene, and it plays different in the book. In the book, Edward tells her to leave before she ever gets on that bike. The way it plays out in this movie is she is putting herself in danger, because if you remember the first Twilight film, that is when Edward zoomed in and saved her and really kicked off that relationship. So she's going to put herself in danger with a rapist, get on that bike. I'm like, nope, this movie is bad. Like, I did not have daughters at the time. I'm like, if I did, though, they could not watch this film. Like, this is awful.
Well, here's the thing to ask. Yes, I would not want children, impressionable children particularly, to watch this and emulate it. But is this movie brave by showing us the thing that parents don't want us to see? The reality that kids do self-harm when they feel sad about relationships ending.
I feel like this is a bigger topic than we could get into it now playing. I mean, there's whole discussions of ethics with the media. Like, do you report a suicide because you know copycats are going to happen? Or how do you report on a school shooting without glorifying the shooter and all that?
It's certainly risky that they're going to allow their heroine, that, again, we're to root for her during all of this, and to allow her to essentially say, I'm going to flirt with dying. If I die, great. And if I don't, it'll get my undead lover back, and then he'll kill me. I mean, again, it really, when you boil all of this stuff down, it does feel like children making really risky, unsafe behaviors, choices.
But there's things worse than death, and I think being gang raped by those four guys counts. I think if you have a choice between just being killed and those four guys passing you around, and they seem really nice this time. Like, when she's freaking out on the back of the bike, that guy stops and is like, oh, what's wrong with you? Instead of just smacking her and having his way with her. Are rapists not rapey unless you happen to find them in the alley?
I'm not sure they're the same guys.
And it flashes back to that scene from the first film. Like, it's drawing that connection.
It draws the connection. I'm not sure it's the same actors. We can't even be 100% sure that there would have been sexual assault. They were having fun with a girl in the dark and tormenting her, and we can make that as dark as you want to. But I hear what you're saying. This is really flirting with self-destructive behavior. That's what it looks like. It looks like someone that is asking to die. Or at the very least, keep in mind, Edward came in and swooped in and saved her in that moment. That was the scene that brought them together. She believes, and Arnie, I'm very curious as to how you interpreted this, that Edward is still watching her or somehow still appearing to her. Is that her self-creation or is that his vampire powers?
I was going to ask you guys in the book, because I assumed that, like the stalker he is, he was just watching her from afar, and when she was doing dangerous stuff, he would psychically appear to her. But then, given that he actually seems completely ignorant of anything she's doing other than when Alice says she has a vision of the future, I think this can't be him. So I think she's just insane and having visions of what she wants to see.
I think that could be supported if you went with how the book portrays it, because this is probably the biggest difference between the two. In the book, it's audible hallucinations. Like, she would just hear his voice in her head. Here, I get it. It's a movie. You want to make it more visual. So to me, by literalizing it like this, it's definitely him in the film, somehow having a psychic connection and still trying to boss her around.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Even if he isn't watching, and I kind of agree with you, Arnie, if you really think about it, what he doesn't know and the confusions that are created by the climax, he can't be watching everything. He doesn't totally get her story. But one of the things they do here to try and bring in all of the prose, all of the endless prattle that Bella is going to do on the page, I really hate this conceit that she is writing emails to Alice.
Yeah.
And that you always have this voiceover of her explaining her feelings about everything going on for the middle of this movie. Act two is a constant narration to Alice as if she would want to know that Bella is getting involved with a werewolf.
And she's writing the emails, but she doesn't have Alice's email address, right? Because we see an inbox full of return to sender undeliverable emails. And so I don't know what Edward said to his family to get every single member to ghost Bella like this. But yeah, these emails are going nowhere.
Yeah, but you know, keep in mind, Alice is clairvoyant and a seer, so she could even not hit send. And technically speaking, Alice would know before you write the email what you were going to say. I just don't know why she would care. Unfortunately, these movies haven't built up Alice enough to feel like that would be a confidant.
No, maybe you're right. Maybe it's because she is the psychic one. She is one of the ones who was nicer to Bella. I mean, that blonde girl wasn't very friendly at all.
Yeah, and book makes clear, Rosalie was bitten and turned as an attempt to give Edward a lover. Yes, it's a sister, but that's how this family works. They keep it in like that. And Rosalie's very bitter that Edward keeps going after humans instead of her. I don't know if that comes clear in the movie, but that's really her anger towards Bella, is that she's the other preferred woman. And Alice already is partnered up with Jasper, so she doesn't have to have those begrudging feelings.
Yeah, Rosalie's with Emmett, who I feel gets the short stick in these films. Even Jasper, they say the line earlier, he got to use his mood manipulation powers. I don't know what Emmett ever does.
Mm-mm. See, he was pretty good at the vampire baseball, but that's it. That's not in this movie.
No.
Is there more baseball in the book? Please tell me there's more baseball in the book.
There's not, unless there's a mention of her mom's boyfriend, who's a minor league baseball player.
Yeah.
A lot of the absurdity goes away when the Cullens go away. I do feel like they were unique. They brought a unique energy into Bella's life. I can see why she's gloomy and looking around. So now we have a romantic rival, someone to swoop in. The perfect rebound boyfriend is her old friend Jake. She wants to ride motorcycles. He's the mechanic that fixed up her pickup truck. He makes perfect sense to repair the bike that she will ride around dangerously on. And I don't know, Arnie, I'm curious to know your take on this. Does she ever fall for Jacob?
She says at the end of the movie she loves him, so assuming she's not lying to spare his feelings.
Romantic love, though?
Yeah, right. That felt platonic to me. I mean, I'll just go ahead and say, I believe Jacob gets played. I believe that Jacob has very hard feelings for her, and I don't think that she's ever thinking about him, considering that as an option at all.
I think she is, in regards to, she starts to not be as gloomy. She starts to be able to live a little bit and have a little bit of happiness without Edward when Jake is around. And so I do think that on a long enough timeline, if things hadn't gone the way they've gone, if Jacob didn't turn into a werewolf and cause all those complications, and if Edward wasn't going to kill himself, there could be a timeline where these two ended up together. But she'd never be completely happy. She'd still be always pining for the what if of Edward. But Jacob is here with his long hair, bad wig, and his teeth. Did you guys notice his blue teeth? I know teeth whitening kind of took some leaps and bounds first in the 90s and then really in the aughts. But man, somebody tell him to lay off the teeth whitener.
I didn't notice they were blue, but yes, they looked very white. Taylor Lautner. It should be said, he didn't even get a call out last time when you were reading off the cast list. Here, they almost got rid of him because Jacob goes through a huge transformation from book one to book two. Like, he becomes 6'5 in this, and he's growing like an inch every few weeks as these wolf powers take over. And so Lautner had to put on, they were going to recast him, but he put on 30 pounds of muscle. So that got him to stay, I guess, because a lot of shirtless dudes in this film. They know who's watching this.
He looks buff, but he does look short.
Yes.
And that is, if nothing else, that's contradictory to the way he's written. But there's another reason to recast him. An obvious one.
Yep.
Watch any scene Taylor Lautner has with Kristen Stewart, and you will go, "Ee! This guy might have abs, but he has no personality.
Yeah, the only other two movies I've seen with Taylor Lautner in them, Grown Ups 2 and The Ridiculous Six, both Adam Sandler films, and
oof,
he pretty much plays it like this. There's not a whole lot of range here.
Yeah, I find him to be better than Edward, though. Here's the thing is, Taylor Lautner looks good by comparison.
Do you mean you like Taylor Lautner more than Robert Pattinson, or you like Jacob more than Edward?
Right, that's an important distinction.
I like the performance Taylor Lautner is giving as Jacob more than I like what Robert Pattinson is doing as Edward Sullen.
I think we all know Robert Pattinson is a good actor.
But was he then? If you go back and watch Chris Evans in Not Another Teen Movie, he was not a good actor. At some point, he learned the craft. Was Robert Pattinson good back then? I don't think so, based upon these movies.
I think you would be doing any actor a disservice by saying because they're bad in a movie, they weren't a good actor at that time.
I'm guessing he's bad in 5 movies. So far, I'm at 2.
I think he's better in this one than in Twilight. Twilight, I agree. He was not good. Maybe because he doesn't have as much to do in this one, we don't see as much of him. But I'd like Pattinson's performance better in this one.
I don't think he cares about these movies.
No.
I think the commentary tracks that you described.
Oh yeah, they didn't even bring Pattinson in back for the commentary on this one. Again, because that first one went so badly, it's just the director and the editor on the commentary. Look, you want to know about Dutch Angles, watch that commentary.
If the cast don't really care about this, you don't want to publicize that. And that's my sense, is that he didn't add this to his reel. It doesn't mean that this is all he could do at the time. It meant he didn't give a fuck, right? I'm just doing this for a paycheck, and I actually hate the fandom and everything that comes with this. That's the way I interpret it, anyway. I think you can look at just about any other movie he's been in, including A Goblet of Fire, which he was before all of this, and say that he had some talent. But Taylor Lautner does not have acting talent. And that is painful to watch these scenes.
Yeah, because I like Jacob in the books. I really liked him in the New Moon novel that we discussed. This is not him on the screen. Like, Taylor Lautner does not do him justice. It just, he feels so bland here and just got that goofy smile on the whole time.
Well, maybe I'm going to say something controversial here that I wouldn't ever imagine would be controversial. But isn't Kristen Stewart kind of sucking too? I just think these movies are badly acted, period. And so again, Taylor Lautner is looking good. You know, I'm not that tall of a guy, but if I hang around with people even shorter than me, then I look really tall by comparison. And I think Taylor Lautner's acting is equivalent to my height.
Yeah, I think Lautner is excited to be in this franchise, making those dollars, whereas Stewart and Pattinson, they're making a lot of money, but I guess they're still bored. They don't want to be here.
And some of that's the characterization. They're goth, they're dead, they're vampires, they're supposed to be disaffected. Whereas, yeah, this guy is, I mean, where's his Hallmark movie, right? That's what Taylor Lautner should be doing now. It feels like cheesy romances are what he would be good for at this point, but we're only happy to see him because he is a breath of fresh air from Edward, who is a very toxic boyfriend, who is always withholding and doing emotionally cruel things to Bella. Yes, this is a character that genuinely seems to like her and doesn't know that he's destined to be a creature that can't be with her. It will take him a while to find out that the legends about his tribe are actually true.
And this movie is showing us, like, when they go to the movie and he starts getting all hot-tempered and things, this is his first time wolfing out. When he's talking about all those guys hanging out together and he doesn't know why, it's because they've all had their wolf puberty and he hasn't yet.
Correct. This is Teen Wolf rules, especially if you've seen that cartoon with the granddaughter who can't wolf out but really wants to. Yes.
And what confused me on that is, again, there are so many little wolf lines. I leave you alone for 2 minutes and the wolves descend in the last movie, that I thought he was a werewolf and hiding it the last movie. And so this time I had to readjust that expectation.
Can I be on Team Mike? I feel like we're being pressured about Team Edward or Team Jacob, but why can't she just be with a normal guy? Why does she have to have these impossible standards with people that can't be with her because they're actually other beings that are not human?
Because she's a teenage girl and that's how teenage girls are?
Yeah, first of all, I'm watching this with my wife, and Marjorie says to me, this was written by a woman, right? because this is woman porn. Oh my God, all the guys want me, but these two guys who are so superhuman want me most. And so no normal guy is going to do for this kind of a story or for this dramatic drama queen, but also she could definitely do better than somebody who regurgitates during a Street Fighter film.
It's never quite clear what happened there. I feel like the book made more mention of the fact that there actually was stomach flu, but the movie makes it seem like he couldn't handle an R-rated movie.
Yeah, I thought that was it, that he saw a little bit of gore on screen and had to go retch, and so nobody would be Team Michael. I mean, you got a vampire who can kill people, and a werewolf who can kill people, and a guy who pukes with violent movies. I guess if she wants a real change of pace and perhaps a non-toxic boyfriend for a change, but that doesn't seem her type.
Right. The problem is that coming with the super boyfriends are super big problems. We're going to find out that Jacob is a werewolf, and werewolves are bad to women. That guy, he was actually the one that rescued Bella from the forest. After she got the bad news, Sam was the one that came shirtless. I don't know what the aversion they have to clothes, but shirtless, carrying her out of the forest.
Stuart, you read the novel, like, it goes through detail about how they lose their clothes.
Yeah, I want to know about the werewolf magic shorts, because they're wearing shorts, they become werewolves, the shorts are gone, they become human again, and the shorts are back.
In the book, they literally just strip down naked. They usually don't wear shirts because that's too much to take them off, but they'll take their shorts off, they strap them around their leg and turn into a wolf, and then when they turn back, they have their shorts to put back on.
Oh my God.
Right. And this is a PG-13 movie. They're not wanting to get into genitalia issues, covering it up with branches, doing that whole Austin Powers thing. So yeah, the compromise is they all look like the Funky Bunch with Marky Mark, right?
Honestly, I'm watching this and I'm just sitting here like, Bella, 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 he's gay. Just get it through your head. He had an awakening in the woods with a bunch of guys, and none of them are wearing shirts.
Yeah, they did say he got mono and he didn't kiss Bella.
Yeah, I'm trying to read in some kind of allegory to Jacob's werewolfism being allegory for homosexuality, but unfortunately he's just too smitten with Bella for me to actually find that.
It is about men that are unavailable. I agree with you. That is what she goes after. And again, that's what excites her, is that she doesn't have to ever surrender to them. But the metaphor you should be looking at is these wolves hurt women. We will find that Sam, that rescuer, actually, in a fit of rage, clawed the face of his fiance, and now she's all scarred up.
Yeah, huge scars along her face, and again, they don't want to make it like he's an actual woman beater, but the fact that if your great power comes with great responsibility, and so you got to control that when you're going to turn into a wolf.
Yeah, given that we saw Jacob almost lose his temper with Mike, and then we see that this wolf guy is a wife clawer, and we see Jacob's temper rise to the surface a couple more times, I want to know who is Team Jacob, because I think we need to get them into some shelters. We need to get them some help because these women are lining up to be battered. I mean, he is worse than Edward.
Or just as cruel.
I mean, we saw Jasper almost did something like Sam did to Emily.
Right, exactly. These men are dangerous. And on both sides, they could really lose control and hurt you. And you have to tame them and love them. And maybe that they won't. Yeah, this feels like, again, terrible messaging for impressionable young women. But I also want to point out, he is saying Edward things at this point. When she comes running to him at one point, he's ghosting her and not answering her phone calls, and she shows up at his house, he starts saying things to her that Edward said. It's not you, it's me. I used to be good. It's over. All of that emotional withholding, it just feels like these are not good options for her.
They do play with this idea, and I appreciate the fact that they're able to, like the last film when they adapted it to film, they got the bad guys in there early, so there's some mystery throughout the film that was missing from that first book. This one, they do something similar. There's a giant bear or something in the woods. Arnie, did you ever buy that that was werewolves killing people? I knew where it was going because I've read the book.
I thought it would be werewolves. I mean, I knew that this was called New Moon. I knew there were werewolves around. I figured they'd come out. And werewolves have to eat something. I just assumed it would be people. When we get the dropped line that all we kill are vampires, I'm like, there's not a lot of vampires around here, and you've got some fucking treaty, so do you just not kill? Do you just cliff jump and do extreme sports as werewolves? Because that seems lame.
I don't know how often they need to eat. I guess to have abs like that, not often. But the Cullens are not a norm, and I think if you read the book, it's more clear. Vampires don't pair up as families and have romantic partnerships the way the Cullens do, because most vampires aren't vegetarian. That is the term for it. Most vampires suck the blood of other humans, so they tend to be callous. And that's why we have Laurent blowing back in here. He seemed like he was better than James and Victoria, but now he's actually doing their bidding by hunting Bella down at the magical pasture where she first fell in love.
Which I thought was great when we go back to that pasture. It's all dead now. It's brown grass. It's not all green. I like some of, again, the frames of this film. I don't know for long stretches if I'm enjoying it, but I think Whites get some good frames in here with spinning cameras and that. But yeah, Laurent now, I guess with the Cullens gone, and that's why Edward's telling her to lie about where they are, like he's evil. Like we saw him helping the Cullens in the last film.
Right. And if they were only a trio, that was my point. Vampires don't do more than three, and the Cullens are a family of seven. They're a rarity, and this is more the type of vampire that the werewolves are going to find and feast on. And they do.
Yeah, before the wolves roll in, Lauren does mention that Victoria is still out there as well, the redhead. She wants revenge for her lover James being killed. But I think we get our first big CGI reveal of these werewolves.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yep, that was my words exactly.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing. You want to do something different. You don't want to have American Werewolf in London and have it be this horrific.
Why not? It's amazing.
No, I'm not talking about the technical. We could talk about the technical. But I'm saying you don't want to make it seem like this monstrous transformation. As Arnie said in the plot summary, it's on command. They really are these majestic beasts that snap. I'm just there. One minute, I'm a shirtless guy. Next minute, I'm this larger than any wolf I've ever seen beast. And props to them for trying to find some kind of balance between a mythical creature and a natural creature. I guess they found the right kind of look, but the CGI, I mean, right, it's just not up to par.
And that's saying a lot if it's coming from Stewart. You usually just roll with the CGI.
I mean, I think you can roll with it, but you're not going to be impressed with it. I mean, if the idea is that a woman could fall in love with this?
I think they're falling in love with the abs, not the fur.
Yeah, I don't think that Bella loves either. The only scene that I saw at all where she actually considered Jacob was when they went motorcycle riding. And she wrecked her vehicle, and she got blood on her head, and she finally realized she could be bloody around her boyfriend and have him not freak out and try and kill her. She was like, oh, you actually can be around my blood and not want to lick me and suck me.
That's much more convenient about every 28 days, let me just say.
Yeah, I don't think they're ever going to explore that territory with bleeding.
Well, I'm just wondering, can Jasper smell that? I mean...
We'll have to ask Stephanie Meyer next time at Comic-Con.
Yeah. These are all metaphors. I would prefer not to think about the literal.
But as far as the wolves go, I have to say the worst scene with the CGI is when we do have Jacob fighting Sam. And the wolves, I don't know if you guys caught this, they're punching each other with their paws. They're not just snapping. They're literally like hitting each other with paws. I was laughing out loud at that scene.
I might have laughed out loud a year ago, but for Christmas, we got a girl some rats because they like rats. We had a squirrel before. Now we got some rats. And when they play and they fight, they do use their limbs. They are definitely using their back legs to kick each other. And I saw like one of the wolves doing that. So I'm like, oh, maybe they did study some animals for this. It didn't seem as silly as it might have before I witnessed actual animals fight.
I have four dogs and none of them use their paws to punch the other dogs.
I don't think that's Sam, by the way. Sam is the one with the messed up fiance. This is Paul, the antagonist, who I don't know what his problem was.
Let me draw that out a point. The entire wolf pack is pretty ill-defined.
Yeah.
I couldn't keep Sam clear from Paul, clear from whoever else was there shirtless and oiled.
I mean, Sam's the alpha, so he's the tallest. My disappointment, and it was a disappointment in the book too, was like they're called a cult and a gang, and I wish they played that up more. So I thought they were the ones that were being cited as giant bears in the forest and eating people. Like, they're made to sound much more dangerous than they turn out to be.
Yeah, why do they have to only eat vampires? I mean, we don't judge ethically wolves for eating other animals. Why can't he have this quality? I feel like they're afraid to make the equivalence that werewolves are somehow worse than vampires, is what it is.
None of her boyfriends can kill people. That's what it comes down to. Is
right.
They have to be good people despite having their dark secrets.
Right. Even though you could hunt the bad people, and there's ways of even framing, I don't think we would lose respect for Edward or Jacob if they hunted human prey. We lose respect for them by the way that they treat Bella, but not by the fact that they need blood from other human beings. And you mentioned Victoria. She's here, sort of, but maybe not the threat that they're ready to unleash yet. I feel like, for the most part, there's just a couple ill-defined scenes of her hanging out with her red hair. They have Charlie, Belly's father, trying to hunt one of these creatures with his new Native American friend, Harry Clearwater. Wasn't in the last movie.
Well, Billy Black can't get up those mountains in a wheelchair. He has to have a different one.
Yeah. They want to kill an old guy, and so rather than hanging out with Jacob's grandfather like he was last time, they now have Graham Greene from Dances with Wolves here just to get, I think she gives him a heart attack? She jumps down out of the trees and does something to him, and he falls over and dies.
Yeah, that's what it says, is he had a heart attack. I thought he just fell over and was going to recover, but no, he is dead.
And she gets chased by the other wolves, jumps off a cliff, which just so happens to be at the same moment that Bella has decided to take that risky behavior to the next level.
Yeah, she's got to get that high off Edward once more, get his attention, so she jumps off this large cliff. Why doesn't Victoria get her? Bella lands in the water, you think she's okay, and then she hits her head.
Victoria's down there, right? I mean, that's what we see in the water.
Yes. Victoria's coming at her, and then Edward, I thought this was imagined, because he's like full form there, and she just doesn't do anything, because maybe Edward showed up, a ghost of him?
Well, again, maybe all this risky behavior is just a way of saying, the closer you get to death, the closer you get to Edward. So, I mean, that's the way I take it, is she's drowning, and here comes an aggressor that's going to finish off the job. And yeah, she ought to be really grateful that Jacob is able to swim in there and rescue her. Yet again, he gets no props for being the better boyfriend.
I still think he'll be abusive because of that temper, though. I still think that's what we're being told.
I agree. It's definitely something to watch. I don't know that it makes me against him. I think, as you point out, by comparison, he's better than Edward. But again, I go Team Mike. Just have a normal guy that's nerdy and not going to try to drink your blood. Maybe for your first boyfriend, that's enough.
That's a boring movie, though, Stuart. And maybe this is a boring movie, too, though.
So, at this point, Alice blows into town because she saw the cliff jump and couldn't see that the werewolf intervened. She can't see visions that involve werewolves, so believes Bella killed herself. And, of course, it's kind of amusing in that Jacob feeds that because, as you called out earlier, Jacob, instead of calling Bella's cell phone, Edward calls the landline to her house. Jacob answers and says, not lying, that Bella's father is preparing a funeral. And so now Edward is going to kill himself and no phone call will stop it. He won't believe Alice. There's nothing you could do except show up in Italy in person before noon tomorrow.
It was even a stretch in Romeo and Juliet. That is the part of the play where, like, it's some page that doesn't get there in time, and the contrivance for why Romeo doesn't know Juliet is sleeping and not dead is just that, because we demand to have a tragic ending, and this is equally contrived that he's mistaken cliff diving for suicide and now has this very complicated way of offing himself, going to the Volturi and embarrassing them by outing vampires to this town.
What's so bizarre to me is, okay, they set it up. They mentioned the Volturi at the beginning. They mentioned Edward having them kill him if he ever lost Bella. And yet, I feel like this is Jacob's film, but the climax is all about Edward again. Like, Jacob just leaves the movie.
Mm-hmm. because the whole thing is a race to get to Edward, and the whole thing, like Stuart said, was she ever even into Jacob? It's always been Edward in the back, and so now that Edward's around, he left her, he dumped her, he moved away, but now that she is seemingly dead, he must convince the head council to draw and quarter him.
Here's the one thing that I hold on to about, like, all right, so I really hate the fact that he told her, you'll never see me again, and then he's in every scene floating in the background. But maybe that is her. Maybe he has been off on his own. It would be helpful to have shown that, right? It would be helpful to have seen what he was doing during all of this time and how much he really knew. Maybe we cut to him making that phone call and we could understand more about what he knew and didn't know about Bella's situation.
Do we ever cut away from her, though? I don't think we do. She's, again, our point of view character entirely.
We do. We have a scene of him walking into this dome, and three dudes with long hair are like, no, we can't kill you. You're just too cool. And him getting ideas about what to do to bait them.
That's true.
Yeah, because Aro has a similar power to Edward, but Edward's is stronger. So they're like, no, you got to join us so we could use your powers.
Aro can touch you and know every thought you've ever had, whereas Edward can know your current thought. And Alice can see visions when they don't involve werewolves. So she's run to Bella, realized what has happened, and for very convoluted reasons, can't tell her brother. It has to be Bella running through fountains and going through this very crowded village before he embarrasses vampires everywhere with this self-sacrificing diamond shirtless scene.
And I called it out in the plot summary, but again, the fact that A, he's waiting until noon. He's not just going to walk out at 8 a.m. when the sun is bright. It's got to be right at noon. What a drama queen. And B, during a fucking parade? Was that planned, that he was going to do it during a parade?
Yeah, he was going to do it on St. Marcus Day, the day the vampires were run out of this town, which is a funny joke. Because the lead vampires are there.
They really missed the ball by not spending more time in Italy. If you're going to go to Italy, give this much more consideration. It's a problem in the book, too. It's only the last 100 pages. We already have heard from the director saying he's not going to do anything different than the book did. Too bad, because I do think that we could have skipped over some of this middle stuff. If indeed you're not going to give the movie to Jacob, and Taylor Lautner is bad enough that you don't give the movie to Jacob, then we should spend a lot more time here in Italy and understand what this ritual is, understand who these supporting characters that are blowing in. I lost my shit when I realized that was Dakota Fanning. Why is Dakota Fanning playing an extra?
I will say Jane, she's going to be coming back, so maybe that's why they got a recognizable actress here. It does feel like a cameo.
It feels like it needs explanation, frankly. Dakota Fanning used to be a very big deal, and then she made Hound Dog. And then she grew up, and then her sister got cool. And then I haven't, you know, I just don't know what she's doing. And to find out, like, yeah, maybe she was a fan of the books and really just wanted to be here. But how embarrassing that she has one scene playing a guard or something like that. She deserved more.
Yeah, Jane, she's the head guard. I feel like the book does her more justice here. Yeah, these guards don't really matter.
Yeah, there's all this teased intrigue about a secretary that's a human but wants to be turned. And a tour guide that's leading humans to their death, and it's happening all off screen. Just give more airtime to these moments. Let this town feel creepy and weird and like a real genuine climax, and just turn down all the Edward and Bella shit. Because her running in slow motion through a fountain to stop him from taking his shirt off is bone stupid.
It's hysterical.
I love they put a robe around him when they bring him back in.
Yeah, he's the anti-Jacob. He is not chiseled. He is not oiled. He is not tanned.
Despite being made of diamond skin, not chiseled. Yeah, too bad. But this is such a weird climax because the whole thing is like, oh, you have a human here. And she's like the most powerful human because no vampire tricks will work on her. So she either has to die or you have to turn her.
And I gotta say, I think you teased this idea earlier, Jacob, but Michael Sheen is having an awful lot of fun in this part. It's not really a good part, but he milks the most out of it with all of his campy line readings.
Do you think he would have done this in Underworld if he got to be a vampire?
Yeah, he used to be respectable, but yeah, now he's just doing trash and just running with it. Just saying, yeah, this is what my career has become.
I'm telling you, the best part of Tron Legacy is when Michael Sheen shows up.
Okay, I haven't seen that one.
It really is. It is the scene of that.
But he finds it extraordinary that a human being would give up her life to save Edward, because they're about to tear his head off, and she says, take me instead. And he wants her in the cult. I think he wants her turned just as much as she wants to be turned. It's always Edward that is the holdout here. And the only reason that I guess they're allowed to leave alive is because Alice has a vision of Bella being a vampire one day, and he feels her hand and knows that that is true.
But we know her visions aren't always right, so there is the added promise where Alice says, if she doesn't, then I'll turn her myself.
And you talk about a moment where, yeah, let's deviate from the book, let's really dwell on this, as the Volturi decide to let them leave, and they're walking out, and walking by them is that secretary with a bunch of tourists. And then we hear screaming, because I assume Aro and the other vampires are feeding on them. And like, what does Bella think about that? This is the group she wants to join. Yeah, sure, they're going to be vegetarians, but she knows she's part of these awful monsters that feed on humans now.
Yeah, the wool has come down on the idea that vampires are good. She met the Cullens and thought they were all that. But by this point, Victoria, Laurent, James, and now this entire Italy clan, for the most part, it is everything that Jacob warned her about. She should really think twice about becoming one. But of course, Edward, he's always in her head. He's literally in her head. And now he's promising never to leave her side, but is going to be forced to see her turned. And that's the interesting thing, is that he claims that he wouldn't want her if she were a vampire. But he gets outvoted. His family is like, yep, let's turn her.
It is so weird that, yeah, again, this series about very controlling people over a woman and like, we're going to vote on your future. And my older daughter, she did sit down for like the last half hour of this film. And when they got to this point, she yelled out, my body, my choice. Just make her a vampire. That's what she wants.
Yeah, I get that. Again, yeah, Bella is, again, it's concerning how little care she gives to her life and her body. And yeah, these choices that are being made by others, really bizarre messaging going on throughout this movie.
But then we get the painful ending of this movie. And again, I'm eating up the awfulness here. When we finally get the Jacob-Edward face-off, and Bella just has to be like, I love you, but it's always Edward.
It is the hardest friend-zoning I've ever seen.
Again, I want to know who's Team Jacob.
Two novels in, I have yet to see the appeal of Edward. I do see the appeal of Jacob. I understand, like, both of them are dangerous, and there's these really bad domestic violence themes going throughout these books. But I do feel like Jacob is less controlling, that he's encouraging Bella to explore things, helping her build those motorcycles and get out there and try new things. I do feel like Bella's in a good spot when she first meets Jacob and gets out of that depression. Then that's why, for this film at least, it might change from film to film, but I'm Team Jacob by the end of this one.
The thing this movie does that pisses me off is I feel like not a lot happens here. I feel like so much of this movie is that montage where we see October, November, December, and she's still sitting in the same chair. Each act has a little bit of a different story, but yet it's so much sitting around waiting for things to happen. But they're teasing two things here. The first thing is they teased Victoria being around. She was the threat put at the end of the last film, but I guess they've decided they want to hold on to her for the next film. And then they're going to tease here that if Bella's turned, then Edward is breaking the truce with Jacob's pack. These are more interesting things teased than what we're actually getting in this movie.
Yeah, it should be said that Stephanie Meyer had already written sort of the fourth book in her head and now was going back to create the stepping stones. She is better at teasing what she wants to do next than saying that New Moon was a complete story that stands on its own.
Yeah, our book review is that a lot of neat ideas, but it's kind of a jumbled mess.
Yeah. And again, all these things coming at the end, sure, it might make you want to see the next movie, but wouldn't it have been more satisfying to have it be better explained and articulated here. Why kick the can down the road? Why procrastinate? Give us it now. Make us like it now. Don't promise that one day we might like it. That's what Edward would do.
At least they end on a laugh line, though. Edward finally agrees, I'll be the one to turn you into a vampire if you'll marry me. Well, given that she has been pining this whole movie to become immortal, to spend eternity with him, the thought of marriage is actually rather quaint. But the shock on her face, like, what? The gasp she utters is like, where is the hesitation coming from? Where is the shock coming from? Marriage is nothing compared to eternity of blood sucking. And so to me, that is like the funniest moment in this movie is Kristen Stewart's look right as we cut to black for credits.
It is bizarre because it's not even in the book. I don't know where that came from.
I guess they really wanted to tease the wedding that we may get.
The only thing I could think is, like, there must be a vampire wedding. Maybe with vampire baseball, we can hope that it's out there on the baseball diamond that they get married.
I don't think we get baseball again, unfortunately. That's my memory, at least.
Ah, damn it. The best part of the movies.
I agree.
But was this one good enough? Jacob, Stewart, are you team recommend or team not recommend for New Moon? Jacob.
I will just say, if you are a parent and you have impressionable tweens or young teens, I just want to emphasize again, really have a good discussion with them, because I think there's a lot of really unhealthy behavior shown here. Like, you should not have to put yourself in danger to get the attention of someone that you like. That is awful. And that was my biggest memory of New Moon when I first watched it. Like, that, let's go jump on that rapist bicycle. Like, this is awful. But if I put all that awful behavior aside, if you're mature enough to take this in, the real curiosity to me after I read the novel, like, I like the New Moon novel more than Twilight, a lot of interesting ideas. And yet this movie, it's worse off for being so close to the book. Like, that was White's mantra. We got to make it like the book. That's what the fans want. And it just didn't capture the parts I liked. And maybe that's because those parts are so scattered and maybe they'll get picked up in another book. Part of the problem is Taylor Lautner. I don't like him as Jacob, even though I like the character Jacob in the novel. And ultimately, this is like the first 45 minutes of Twilight, like, I was really into. I never have that stretch in this one, and I never have the absurdity of baseball or, well, there's bad effects in this one, but I don't know. It never feels like it gets into that Brown Arrow territory for me. Again, there's a lot of neat shots. I think when Bella's floating in the ocean with Edward next to her, like, there's a lot of neat scenes. I wish they could have melded this into a better story where I just felt more emotional going in. It's supposed to be a love story of the ages, like Romeo and Juliet, and I'm just confused once we get to Italy, and I'm laughing at Aro, like, love Michael Sheen in this, but I just don't understand Stephanie Meyer's, and therefore this film's, because it's adhere so close, the way she gets from point A to B to C. It always feels very convoluted and not the most interesting to me. So yeah, this one, it's all right, but I get kind of bored. It's kind of mundane, and yeah, it's not a recommend.
Stuart.
I think it's both a blessing and a curse that New Moon is a more respectable film than Twilight. As Jacob pointed out last week, I was really struggling to figure out if the filmmakers were secretly mocking Stephanie Meyer or not. By having the vampire baseball and the salad scene and all of that, were they saying, winking at us that this doomed romance was absurd? Running up the trees like it's a Jackie Chan movie?
Spider monkey!
Yeah, I mean, that's all gone, and I miss it. I don't want this to be a straight teen romance, and that's kind of what they've given. They've given something that's not mockable. It's actually not trashy and stupid by the reputation that Twilight has, for the most part. When we get to the end, yeah, there's stuff to point at and mock, but for the most part, this is a pretty straightforward vampire flick that consequently is just not that interesting. I mean, it feels like a CW show that I wouldn't watch, particularly when the acting's no good. That's going to be the key to all of this. You're telling me now I have to care about these romance storylines and who could be Team Jacob, Pattinson, Kristen Stewart. They're all awful. It's just not working. So a very average movie that I toyed giving a pass because it's an improvement, but when you get to Italy, it just kind of all loses its way. It just all goes to shit. The good ideas get lost. And as Arnie pointed out, some of these scenes at the end here are pretty mockable, with shirtless Jacob standing in the road saying, "You're going to break the truce." Here's the crazy thing. This book wasn't the stupid romance novel that the haters claim Twilight is. And so I do believe there's a good movie to be told here, and this is not it. So it's kind of a disappointment that I'm giving it a mild not recommend instead of a brown arrow or a green arrow, both of which would have been possible.
And I was right on the line with this one because huge stretches of it are incredibly dull. But when it's not dull, it's incredibly stupid.
And not where I thought you were going.
I mean, at no point do I respect anything about this movie. I don't respect the heroine's self-destructive behavior. I don't respect either the possibly physically abusive boyfriend or the emotionally abusive boyfriend or the guy who pukes in the horror movie. And so what I can say, though, is when it was bad, I was laughing at it. The way, Stuart, you were claiming you were laughing at last week, and I wasn't able to see a lot of humor in it. I saw some in the second half. And again, the baseball game is just high art. But outside of that baseball game, I didn't see a whole lot. Here, wolves punching each other, a trip to Italy to get across the globe by noon, and getting there in the nick of time in a slow motion run through a bunch of nuns? I don't know what all those people in red cloaks were. Clerics?
They were just there to celebrate St. Marcus Day.
Okay. And then, yeah, Michael Sheen's performance. There is enough here that is indeed mockable enough for me to weakly give this a brown arrow recommend. It is so bad that it's good when something happens. That said, don't lock yourself in a theater with it with absolutely nothing else to occupy your mind, or else you're going to feel like Bella when all those months are passing and she's just sitting in the same chair. It's almost so bad it's bad, but I'm going to give it just the weakest so bad it's good.
So brown arrow for you.
Yeah.
You're recommending this because it's funnier than the last movie.
Yes.
I don't know how you think this is more absurd than what was on the screen last week, but okay, we all have our opinions. Team Jacob or Team Edward? I forget. Where do you land on this?
Team get me the fuck out of here? If I have to pick between those two, Edward.
Okay.
And I'm going with Jacob.
Jacob just seems like he's going to scar her up and beat her.
So is Edward!
I agree. I'm Team Mike. Again, just be normal and have a nerdy boyfriend that you're going to break up with in after prom.
Stuart, you remind me, like, I'm watching these extras on the Blu-ray, and they have just stuff about the fans, and everyone's Team Edward, Team Jacob, and then you got the one person like, Dr. Cullen could be my daddy, like, you just go off the beaten path.
See, I really think that Bella needs to go and get some DVDs of Beverly Hills 90210 and find the episode where Kelly has to choose between Dylan and Brandon, and she goes, I choose me. Do I have to pick a team? I'm Team Bella masturbating and leaving all these guys out of her life.
I mean, it would be nice if she could mature and realize that she's better than this, but I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen next. I feel like we've learned the players, but not the plot for Eclipse.
All I remember is Eclipse was my least favorite of the films.
That's saying a lot right now. That's saying a lot.
Yeah, that's not the direction I wanted to go, but okay.
I'm telling you, I'm just holding my breath. I'm just treading water till we get to Breaking Dawn. That's where it all comes into place.
All right, fair enough. I will do that as well.
In the meantime, while I gave this a brown arrow, my co-host gave it a red, I want to give a green arrow to all of our donors. Thank you so much for your support of our show, and hopefully you're finding some enjoyment in this Twilight retrospective, be it so bad it's good or just enjoying listening to us talk about it. We've got three more shows in the spring-summer donation drive. We hope you'll come back for each and every one of them. And until next week, gotta go, got a vampire to kill.
This is the last time you'll ever see me. I won't come back. And you can go on with your life without any interference from me. It'll be like I never existed, I promise. I'm just sorry I let this go on for so long.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing.
I can read every mind in this room. Money, sex, money, sex, cat.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
I'm never gonna get enough of this. We don't get tired. We don't have to rest or catch our breath or eat. I mean, how are we gonna stop?
We hope you enjoyed the show.
I'm glad I amuse you.
Go to NowPlayingPodcast.com each week to hear our hosts review the original novels on which these movies are based.
You're not really into this, are you?
I actually really just want to go to this bookstore.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
But I can't help myself. You are so mouth-watering.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
I'm down with the kids.
Oh yeah, dude. You're the bomb.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
I like my own personal brand of heroin.
Now Playing is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
Bella, they're not even alive. It makes me sick. Better you really be dead than one of them.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
Everything about me invites you in. My voice, my face, even my smell.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Can't trust vampires. Trust me.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
I have to report a crime. The Collins. They've done something terrible.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
Oh, you see, there's no law broken here.
Agreed. But does it then follow that there is no danger?
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I have never met anyone more prone to life-threatening idiocy.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
My time as a human was over, but I never felt more alive.
This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing, and as I usually tell my dates, I'll make it quick. I promise.
Oh, what the fuck?
And Stuart.
Hold on, I'm not fucking done. That's
No. Okay.
Noise.
Yeah, I thought that was weird, but I'm like, all right, if that's how you want to do it. Oh, fuck. All right.